Hello. Welcome to the Creative Shift Podcast. I'm Helga Henry. Join me in this space for conversation with entrepreneurs, intellects, business leaders, and policymakers. We've all done it, haven't we? We've gone to an event and just had that feeling of butterflies in your stomach, that nervousness. And in fact, when we teach networking or we do business relationship development courses, it's that nervousness that people say is one of the biggest barriers to their effective networking. And so I just wanted to say that even if you're a seasoned networker, I'm afraid to say like I am, you can still get that. In a couple of days, I'm going to go to the Editorial Intelligence EI Comment Awards breakfast. It's quite a glitzy thing. It's in Reba in London, very first thing in the morning. And lots of high-profile journalists and business columnists, Alison Pearson, Caitlin Moran, Lucy Kellaway, David Aronovich, really household names if you read the papers and like that sort of thing, are all milling about. And I remember very clearly the first time I went a couple of years ago, I was somewhat in awe and a bit starstruck, not least because it was 7:45 in the morning. But then I remembered, this is exactly what I talk about in our courses. And if I am teaching and empowering people to get over their feelings of nervousness, then maybe I should take a dose of my own medicine. So I took a deep breath and then I just remembered that I wasn't the only person who was there for the first time. I looked around and sure enough, there was someone who was trying to juggle with their cup of coffee and their croissant, just like I was, and standing, looking around, not really talking to anyone. In fact, it turned out it was one of the nominated writers. She was up for the Science Award and we had a nice conversation. And just touching, making a human connection like that starts to calm you down and make you feel like you're a bit more in control. The awards are run by a woman called Julia Hobsbawm, and she runs a company called Editorial Intelligence, and she also does a lot of work around networking. And she likens that moment to air travel. She calls it cloud control. You know, when you have that moment of trundling along, you know, just ready to take off, and you don't know if you're going to, and then suddenly the plane lifts off, you have that feeling of lift, and suddenly you're flying. Or, if you want the other way, that feeling of descent, of levelling off, and then you've landed and you're safe. That transition moment you can get over quite easily by just reaching out to another person, having a smile and a friendly face, and just starting a conversation. I wasn't in the full swing of it yet, but it really helped. And as I said at the time, networking is a marathon, not a sprint. I met some people at that event. I kept in touch with a few of them. There'll be a few I'll meet when I see them again next week. But it's about slowly and organically developing relationships, finding areas of mutual interest that will one day, some way or another, pay off. So don't let nervousness and that butterfly feeling hold you back. We all get it, and it's quickly quelled by just making a connection, saying hello. Everything starts with a conversation, and who knows where that hello will take you. So on today's Creative Shift podcast interview, I am really delighted to welcome Sam Slater. Sam, hello.
Afternoon.
Sam, I jokingly referred to you earlier as a musical impresario, but while that remains true, how would you describe what you do?
That's probably the politer way of I've heard myself being described as recently. A musician who does all sorts, which is probably the same of a lot of musicians. You end up having fingers in lots of pies, so to speak, lots of different projects, projects that are related to music or business ventures, if you like, but not necessarily involving performing either, producing, education, programming, all sorts.
Yeah. Specifically, for those of you who don't know, Sam is the founder member of the TG Collective, a wonderful musical ensemble who specialise, I guess, gypsy jazz, is that fair?
Yeah, gypsy jazz, flamenco, a little bit of contemporary classical vibe and jazz.
Yeah.
Quite a mixture.
Brilliant. And then from that, you know a number of very talented musicians, and that led you, I guess, to setting up the Mubu Music Agency.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
So how did that come about? Were people asking you to supply musicians for different sort of... I know you do... What sort of things do you do? Weddings and what
it's,
else?
Well, it's evolved from when we initially set up, which would be probably 5-6 years ago. We went down the path of we'll provide musicians for weddings, for business events and the like. But to be honest, it gets a bit boring because it's not an overly creative pursuit to say, here's a band for your wedding. You can do a little bit, you can refine it with musical tastes or instruments or different genres, but ultimately you're just a middleman putting a musician into a room for an afternoon. So we ended up going a little bit more down creative routes. So we've done a lot of work with Town Hall Symphony Hall on their education programme, community performances, with International Dance Festival Birmingham, putting together several weeks' worth of improvising musicians for their flagship strand a couple of years ago and the previous festival before that. Various different arts organisation, cultural, all sorts of mixtures, which is a lot more exciting to be involved with because you can be a lot more refined on what music you want, be involved in a bit more hands-on producing, stylistically.
So you've moved from a sort of straight service provider to almost, it sounds to me like a consultant, really. You're providing a much more sophisticated package of musicians and music types in service of other possibly larger cultural projects. And that often happens with businesses. They start off doing one thing, don't they, and they morph into the thing they're happiest with. In business terms, there's a thing called the Blue Ocean Strategy, and they talk about a red ocean, which is full of the blood from, you know, where the sharks have gnawed at the fish.
Oh, nice.
And instead of being in the blue, in the red ocean, you want to be in the blue ocean. You want to be swimming where no one else is swimming. So it sounds to me also a little bit that with Mubu, you've moved into a sort of blue ocean.
Yeah.
There are fewer people doing it, and it's perhaps a more pleasant place to swim. And then your most recent sort of development, I guess, is the development of the record label, Stony Lane Records. So say a little bit about that.
That's something I've had in mind for quite a while, but it's never really come to fruition, partly through being busy on doing all sorts of other things, and also musicians locally who were ready to put out an album of a certain quality, a certain level of playing, people who've reached a good level of their career to then record and put albums out which would be more prominent nationally or internationally. I think the jazz scene in Birmingham, which is the label centred around jazz but equally picking up world and classical strands, I think the jazz scene in Birmingham has reached a point where there are lots of players coming to Birmingham, coming out of music college, who would be recognised more nationally, and there's more quality and more people, more players in the city. So there's a need for the scene.
Yeah.
It's not a particularly money-making venture, as you often find with lots of musical ventures. It's not going to make any money, certainly short-term. But in terms of improving the scene, improving the collective of musicians we've got here, and strength in numbers was a big thing. So whereas one person putting out an album on their own is fine, if we've got half a dozen all on the same label, everyone helps everybody else in terms of getting press attention, more attention to the scene.
So it sounds like there's a maturity now in the music scene here that creates the demand and then also helps stimulate demand, so it becomes part of the virtuous circle. At this point, I suppose I should declare, I suppose, a vested interest in that I've been watching Sam, first of all, as a member of Trio Gitano, and then as the TG Collective, and they played at my 50th birthday party. So they are by my favourite musicians by quite a long chalk. But I love watching Sam and his fellow colleagues play. And as you know, one of the things we are interested in here at the Creative Shift podcast is confidence. And it strikes me that the confidence to play music in public, it's all very well. If you're an actor, you are in control of your own instrument, if you like. You've got your voice, you've got your body. That's what you work with. Whereas you are doing something mechanical, as in, you know, you're playing an instrument with your hands. Does that help? Do you hide behind that? What gives you confidence in that context?
I think you do hide behind. I play guitar, and it's quite nice to have something there. It's almost a comfort blanket to hold on to. And I think if you learn from an early age and you perform from a young age, it's almost second nature to start playing in front of bigger audiences or different locations and venues. If you're comfortable with the musicians around you, if you're playing in a band, or with your own material, if you're playing solo, that's the first step. I remember playing in school concerts, you know, 12, 13, 14, and you're absolutely cacking yourself. And so when you start playing in bigger venues more professionally, I think it becomes just, it's the thing you do. So
it's more familiar. So yeah. You've gotten over some of those early feelings of nerves just by putting yourself in more and more, not perilous situations, but bigger and bigger contexts.
Yeah,
I suppose is the best.
I think you can still get nervous. So if we do something which we know is more high profile, say if we're doing a live radio session or a prominent venue, if we know there's going to be a reviewer there, I think you just automatically, your brain will go, there's a bit more lying, reliant on what's about to happen. So
yeah.
I think you do still, though, just learn to relax a bit more, and it's just another person, it's just someone else, and you've done it X number of times before, a zillion times. So as long as you're confident in your band and your music.
And what builds that confidence? Is that just about time together? I know rehearsal is about just getting it right, again, mechanically, but is there anything that you think is important in the rehearsal process to help you build that confidence in you as an ensemble?
I think playing together a lot, performing together, is a big difference between doing lots of rehearsals, getting all the right notes, to going and sitting in front of a couple of hundred people and pulling it off on stage. Also more as a performance, not just here's the notes, we're repeating them back to you.
Yeah.
You've got to perform to people. You can't just go...
You've got to bring your A... Well, it's showtime. You've got to bring your A game.
Yeah, quite.
And knowing how each person is going to do that within their... within their particular specialism, I guess, is helpful.
Yeah.
So, in conclusion, lots of people want to make their money, make their living, you know, as a musician.
Mm-hmm.
More or less realistically, you know, we look at all the queues around the block when it's X Factor or Britain's Got Talent, and let's not go there. But
let's hope it snows.
What would you say to people who want to make a living playing music? Is there any top tips that you at this point could give them?
Become a lawyer, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say other than don't.
I think you need to probably try and branch out into as many different disciplines as you can musically, which makes you more versatile, which often comes of being a jazz musician. You'll find they're fairly flexible players, so they can go and play on a pop gig or something a bit more folky. Potentially as well as jazz stuff, whereas sometimes if you find, it's not always, but a classical musician that has only played classical music will be narrowed more so to that field. Broadening musical genres and horizons, and just through meeting and playing with other people in different styles, you just learn a lot more, and playing with people who are better than you, which is, I think you can transfer to lots of different walks of life.
Yes. But I was going to say, sounds to me like that's build your network, isn't it? Build your network of peers.
Kind of. But I think to be able to perform with some of the musicians I do, both in our band and with other bands who are some amazing players who are really lucky to play with, and it raises your game. You try and keep up with the greats.
Brilliant. Thank you. I often talk about people's vision for their business, but you know, you can have an artistic vision for a country or a place even. And what makes me say that is I've recently returned from my fourth holiday in Lanzarote, which, if you don't know it, has been massively influenced by the artist Cesar Manrique. Manrique made his money, made his name working in New York with his contemporaries, Miro and Picasso. And he went back to his home island of Lanzarote, where he made his home. And what he did there was he started to persuade all the planning authorities and builders and developers to keep Lanzarote looking like the island that it always was. He got the planning authorities to regulate that houses couldn't be much more than two stories high, that they would all be painted white, that the woodwork would be blue by the sea, or neutral, natural colour, or internally, interior, in the mountains and near the forests, green or brown, or natural. He said he wanted to see the road running like a carpet over the island, and that the sense that the lava, the volcanic rock, had been parted to make way for the road. So that's what they did in many parts of the island, ran the roads and then carefully arranged the volcanic rock either side to look like it had just made way for the road to run. At the time, people couldn't quite work out what he was up to. He built some amazing spaces, a beautiful concert hall called Cameos de Agua, which people couldn't quite understand. But now it's an international centre for visitors. And in fact, Lanzarote, of all the islands in the Canary Islands, is the most visited, with over 1 million visitors a year. There's a film called Taro, the Eco of Cesar Manrique, where a city official, an island official, said 20 years ago when he started talking about this, I didn't understand what he was getting at. But what we did was, instead of becoming builders, we became artist builders. And now, 20 years later, that I see all these people coming to see what he did, now I understand. So, you know, artistic vision can also be big business. Tourism is the mainstay of the Lanzarotean economy, and it is truly beautiful to go and visit. It's unspoiled. It's not like a lot of its neighbours with those high-rise, highly developed environments. So, you know, art means business in more ways than one. And wouldn't it be fantastic if, in planning Birmingham's landscape, feel and look, we got some artists involved? That's all for this time. Thanks for listening to the Creative Shift podcast, recorded in the analogue delights of Highbury Studio. Big shout out to John and our engineer Rob. Tune in next time for more insight, comment, and of course, a rant or two. Bye.